Good morning. May it please the Court, Mark Jones on behalf of the appellant, County of Lake. This case is now about, and has always been about, one central issue, and that is Sharon Luzinger a qualified individual under the FEHA? More specifically, could Ms. Luzinger, as of April of 2004, perform the essential functions of the position for which she had held for quite some time?
Well, isn't the real issue whether the jury was entitled to so find? That's a slightly different issue. I mean, we're after a jury trial here.
And a jury finding
on instructions that you're not challenging.
That's correct. Because I think there's a total failure of evidence to – not just a lack of substantial evidence, but a failure of evidence to support the verdict.
That's a pretty hard barrier to overcome.
I know it is, Your Honor. I know it is. But it, the reason you have to start with the qualified individual analysis is because the real key in the case, I think, is what is the essential function of her position? It is not just the ability to occasionally restrain a violent or aggressive juvenile.
But it was proper for the jury to determine the essential functions, right?
It was.
And you have no complaint about the instructions the jury got.
That's right, Your Honor. But the problem is that the evidence was undisputed and unequivocal as to what the essential function was. So the jury, neither the jury nor the judge, could disregard the undisputed evidence of what that was.
It wasn't, in fact, undisputed, as my understanding. You had some documents, but you also had – there was also a set of, you know, on-the-ground facts in terms of what she actually did. And it was those together that informed the question of what was essential – her essential functions, particularly given California law, which has a list of factors of which the company's designation is one but not dispositive.
That's true. That's true. But the problem with that analysis is that it is not an individual officer's individual experience with the frequency of retaining wards that makes the determination. It's not determinative of what the essential function is. The essential function is determined by the employer's input, the employee's input, which happened here. And you look at those list of factors, as you noted, in the California regulations that deal with how that is determined. We've cited a number of cases, both in this circuit and around the country, that clearly indicate that an individual officer, and these are peace officer cases, so they're slightly different than your normal, I suppose, run-of-the-mill case, because you have a serious safety aspect.
Was there evidence from people other than her about the realistic number of times she would have to engage in this activity?
There was undisputed evidence from the Department of Probation head, Mr. Buchholz, that there in 2004, which is the critical year that we're talking about, there were 90 incidents where juveniles, and this is in our brief, where juveniles had to be restrained. So we're not talking about, and it may be that an officer such as Ms. Luzinger, in her experience, she had to do that maybe every couple of months. But the fact is these happen regularly, and it's not like they're on some sort of timetable. The cases are clear, and the evidence was absolutely clear in this case, that they are random. These are random, unexpected, in the sense of when they occur. The one thing's for sure in a juvenile hall, you can expect there will be occasions in which you will have to put, as a correctional officer, put your hands on a juvenile.
And there were occasions when Ms. Luzinger had to do that and did do that.
Yes, she did.
No one ever said that she didn't do it properly or that her wrist interfered in any way with her ability to do it.
There are, I believe, two occasions after her doctor deemed her wrist to be a permanent disability condition in which she was engaged with other officers in restraining wards. There's a conflict in the evidence, and obviously looking at the evidence.
Jury
exactly. Looking at all the evidence in her best case scenario is she established that she could restrain wards on an occasional basis. That is what she established.
Which was necessary for what she actually did do.
But that is not what the essential function. You have to go back, though, and the idea that the jury could determine that the essential function was something other than what the undisputed evidence was is improper. The fact is
you didn't complain about the jury instructions.
No, I did not.
You didn't complain about the fact that the jury made that determination.
Oh, absolutely we did. We did in our motion for judgment both before trial, I mean, before the verdict was entered, when the district court indicated that in her it was her practice never to grant one of those. She was going to let it go to the jury. And then that was all part of our post-verdict motion.
I think what Judge Roth is asking is not whether you disagreed with the conclusion, but whether you disagreed with submitting this to the jury in general.
Whether I disagreed with the judge allowing this to go to the jury?
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why we filed.
Well, on a summary judgment basis, but not on the basis that the issue was not properly for a jury if there's conflicting facts.
We did, Your Honor, and that was part of our pre-verdict.
Well, why would it not be proper for a jury? Well, you haven't appealed on that ground anyway.
No, I know. It's proper for a jury to determine what the essential function of the job is.
Right.
The jury is not allowed, though. It's improper for a jury to disregard the undisputed evidence of every single witness, including Ms. Luzinger, every single piece of paper that related to that function, that indicated that the essential function was not just the ability to occasionally restrain a ward. That was her individual experience.
But wasn't it also true that even if that the only evidence that she couldn't do what was prescribed to be done was a recommendation by her doctor, which there was a dispute about whether that was a limitation or simply him saying, well, this would be, you know, preferable, but not just saying that she couldn't do it.
There were. No one is taking the position, the county's not taking the position that Ms. Luzinger could not on occasion, following her doctor's recommendations, limitations, occasionally restrain a ward.
What evidence is it that she couldn't do it as much as she was likely to be required to do it?
Because on the issue, and in response to that question, on the issue of whether these were recommendations or whether these were limitations, and there may be some interpretation that can be done, or in terms of Dr. Nelson's report, the fact is that the district court, in its order denying my client's motion for judgment as a matter of law, refers to those, and I quote, Dr. Nelson's suggestion that she, meaning Ms. Luzinger, needs to limit the number of times that she has to forcefully restrain a client is not a declaration that Luzinger was incapable of performing the essential function of restraining wards. And everybody agrees with that. But then she goes on to say, and this is not subject to interpretation, this is what the undisputed evidence was. The judge goes on to say, Dr. Nelson's assertion is an assertion that Luzinger needed to limit how often she had to use force. She was under a limitation, even with Judge Armstrong's interpretation of the evidence. She had to be limited in the number of times, how frequently she could use force. Now, the fact that historically she, in her personal experience, had to do this maybe every couple of months is not determinative. The issue is you have a correctional.
What did Dr. Nelson testify to at the trial?
I'm sorry?
What did Dr. Nelson testify to at the trial?
Well, one thing he testified to that it, as of December of 2003, that she, in his view, she was permanently incapacitated from performing that job. And then he went on to say, somewhat contradictorily, but he went on to say that she could perform this job not all the time. She could perform the restraint function, not all the time. In fact, he even said she could do it every once in a while. Now, think about that. You have a correctional officer who has to have the ability, whether you use it or not, who has to have the ability to restrain or put their hands on an aggressive juvenile, just like a correctional officer, very similar to any police officer, at any time. And that means that if you do it today, you have to be able to do it tomorrow. It doesn't matter.
She can't do it every hour.
She can't do it every hour.
But there's no testimony that the job required it.
Yes, there was. Absolutely. Mr. Buchholz testified without any dispute, any contradictory evidence, that these incidents could happen 5 times in a day. It would be rare, but that could happen. It's more likely that it's not going to happen that often. But, again, it's turning the FEHA on its head.
And this is something that the jury had to consider.
They had to consider the evidence as to the essential function. But, see, if you look at the cases that we've cited, both in this circuit and all around the country.
Well, you seem to be saying that the essential function is that she be able to do it continuously.
No. And that's where Judge Armstrong.
Even the employment job description says, 20 to 30% of the job.
Right.
And
that's
there's
right.
No testimony that she couldn't do it 20 to 30%.
No, the difference is, and this is where I think the district court got off on the wrong track, because she characterized it as continuously, that we're saying that she has to be able to do it all the time, not at any time, all the time. In other words, and it's not semantics. There's a difference between being able to constantly perform this function. That's not our position. Our position is you have to have the constant ability to be able to perform this function. There's a very clear distinction between those two.
And is there testimony? Well, there is testimony both ways as to whether she could constantly perform that.
No, there is not. There is no testimony. And again, you have to start with
the fact. There is testimony she could. The question is if she had to do it continuously,
right.
The effect it might have on her ability.
There is no testimony. There is no evidence in the case from any witness that indicates that she could do this job more than on an occasional basis if she was called to do that. That is the complete failure of proof. Her doctors indicated that she could do it on an occasional, every now and then basis. Because that's what she said she had been doing, and they said, well, then she can continue to do it that way. So that's the real difference. The essential function is not determined. And this is in Hoskins and Holbrook and Kaplan and all the cases that we cited, is not determined by an individual employee's experience. It's determined by all of the factors that Judge Berzon noted. And those factors were all into evidence. If you look at our brief and you look at the testimony of Ms. Luzinger, she admits in several places consistently, as did all the other witnesses, the correctional officers, the head of probation, to be qualified for that position, you have to be able to do that at any time. And that does not mean every 2 months. That means you got to be able to do it today and this afternoon if you have to, and Friday if you have to. Now, whether or not you are actually called to do that, it's similar to a police officer who has a problem pulling his revolver, and he goes to his doctor, and the doctor says, you can do that, just don't do it more than every now and then.
Is not one of the factors to consider the work experiences of past incumbents in
yes.
the job?
Yes, that's,
right.
that's one of them.
All right, and was not the jury properly considering that?
Well, I don't know if they were or not, but they disregarded all of the evidence that was undisputed as to the essential function. I better reserve my minute.
Excuse me. You said they disregarded all the evidence, but some of the evidence was the main evidence on that, which you've given us so far, was that there were 90 incidents over a, what, several-year period?
1 year.
A 1 year period, and if divided up by correctional officers, how many is that?
That's probably
about 12 or 13.
Probably once a week.
It's not once a week. It's once a week if you use all, if everybody's doing
it. Well, that's what I mean, if you use everybody.
If
together.
One person was doing it.
Right.
But there isn't one person. There were, what, six
four
people.
Four in the day and two at night.
Right. So there were six people. So, right. In fact, it was about once a month, which is about what she said.
Well, you've got a year, and you've got 90 incidents, so that
you
would
have
be.
You have six people, so that's 15 per person.
I know, but again, it.
But
that assumes that
the
these happen.
On the ground reality. You're saying the jury had to ignore the on-the-ground reality.
Absolutely. And not just the on-the-ground reality, but the – I'm using up the last of my time in answering this question. But the jury had to have ignored the undisputed evidence as to what the essential function was, and that was that the undisputed testimony from Ms. Luzinger as well, that a correctional officer has to be able to do that function, whether you do it or not. Maybe she never had to do it, but you have to have the ability to do it, because it's not something that gets calendared and you say, this month we'll do this and next month we'll do that.
I think you've made your point.
Thank you. I guess I'll reserve my 20 seconds. Oh, I think I'm over.
That's it. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Chris Redburn for appellee Sharon Luzinger. To start out where the county ended, let me say that she could do all of the functions of the job, and that the on-the-ground experience, her on-the-ground experience and the on-the-ground experience of other guards who also testified at the trial was that she had to restrain these juveniles approximately once a month. In addition, there is evidence that hasn't been mentioned by the county that they did a survey of restraint incidents in which she was involved between 2003 and 2004. There was one in January and one in November of 2003 and one in January, February, and March of 2004, which is considerably less than one a month on the average, although in 1 year it was once a month.
But she wasn't working some of that time, right?
During that period that I just cited, she was working the entire time. Well, no.
I thought she wasn't working for some of 2003.
Yeah, 2003. She was out on a leave. So the bottom line of the county's argument is that a person who is actually doing a job is not able to do the job. And the illogic of it is enough, I think, to defeat the attack on the factual showing in this case. It's also the county has stated that even if she never had to do it in 16 years, even if she never had to restrain a juvenile more than once a month in 16 years, that it could still be an essential job function because the possibility exists out there somewhere that she might have to. But we're here in the Court of Appeal, not before the jury. And the issue before this court is whether or not there is some evidence. And looking at the evidence, the court assumes the facts in favor of the judgment below and in favor of the trial court's post-trial rulings. And based on that standard of review, it seems to me this court can't assume that an essential job function is something that the plaintiff never had to do in all her years at the at juvenile hall. Certainly,
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Yes, Your Honor.
There are essential job functions that someone never has to do that are relevant. But under the instructions given to the jury here, including the factor that testimony from others who have done the job is relevant, I think the jury verdict here has to be viewed in that light. But I think particularly where we are dealing with security people, law enforcement, that the fact that one particular person has never had to do something does not mean it is not an essential function of the job.
I didn't mean to imply that it couldn't be an essential function just because she didn't have to do it. What I meant to imply is
the fact that she had never done it.
Yeah, a jury could find that because she had done it only once a month, that was the...
That she was able to do it.
Yeah, and that was the essential. That was the definition of the essential job function. They could conclude that as a matter of fact. And it's not this court's role, really, to weigh one fact against another and decide which one to go with and which one not to go with.
What was her position? Was she able to argue this to the... Was the county able to argue this to the jury, that she was not able to do this on a regular basis?
Yes, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, the argument here sounds too much like a jury like the argument that was made to the jury in this case. And that is one of the underlying problems with the appeal. It's a substantial evidence approach, which is, I think I can safely say, disfavored in the Court of Appeal. At least the standards are very, very demanding, and they're definitely not met here.
What about, assuming we got by that, the other issue in the case, I think, was a reasonable accommodation issue, i.e., did she sufficiently propose or was she denied a reasonable accommodation?
Well, there's ample evidence that she, in California law, the reasonable accommodation issue is a separate claim for relief, unlike under the ADA. And there's certainly ample evidence that there wasn't a failure to accommodate.
Was she asking for an accommodation?
Yes, she was.
What accommodation was
it? She met with it was an off-the-cuff meeting with Mr. Buchholz, and Ms. Leutzinger asked either that a more experienced person be placed on the graveyard shift, if she was to be on the graveyard shift, or that she be placed on the day shift. Those were specific requests that she made for accommodations, which he denied. During trial, there was evidence that a wrist brace might have helped reduce the pain she felt from her wrist injury. This is another possible accommodation. And there are even accommodations that we can't really quite identify, but the record shows that Steve Ryan and the county council themselves talked to Mr. Buchholz, told him that there were some accommodations. The record doesn't say what they might have been, but there were actual accommodations that could have been proposed, and Mr. Buchholz refused to offer those accommodations. So there's ample evidence of a failure to accommodate under California Government Code Section 129.
Isn't it in the record that every juvenile officer had to be able to perform all the functions of the job?
Well, they had to be able to, under the law, they have to be able to perform the essential job functions. And I do want to make it clear that it's not been disputed that restraint of
and they had to be interchangeable so that you couldn't, that every one of them had to be able to perform all the functions of the job. You couldn't, it was not a situation where you could rely on one person on duty to perform some of the functions and another person on duty to perform other functions.
That's true, Your Honor. It's not disputed that restraint of juveniles is an essential job function. What the dispute is about the breadth of that requirement. And the county has tried to argue that you have to be able to do it all the time, basically. They've edged right up to that point and then kind of backed away. But that's really basically their argument. And there's no evidence that you had to be able to do it all the time. And most importantly for this court, there's ample evidence that about once a month was how often the restraint had to be applied. There's also a third cause of action for failure to engage in the interactive process, which is also a separate cause of action under a state law. And there's ample evidence there also that the county failed to engage in the interactive process. It failed to consult with her about possible accommodations after her first surgery, and therefore it imposed limitations which were unrealistic. It failed to consult with her about an assignment after her second surgery and gave her a job which was harder on her wrist than the guard job was. Mr. Buchholz refused to meet with her in 2004 when she wanted to talk about accommodations, and she was removed from her position without any discussion about what accommodations might allow her to continue. She complained to the Board of Supervisors about discrimination on the basis of a physical disability and got no response. There was no ergonomic evaluation, no functional capacity evaluation, and no real back and forth about what might be possible to let her stay on the job that she had been in.
It seems like there is some contradiction between her position that she could do the job perfectly well and the notion that she needed accommodation to stay on the job.
It's not a contradiction, Your Honor. I think it's our position is that both were true. And there's no law that says we're forced to an election between these two things. The facts of the case are that she could do the job, and if she didn't make some efforts, she could be in a lot of pain, and there were ways to reduce the pain. But she could do the job and endure the pain. The pain was not causing further damage to her. So her doctor released her without restrictions. And therefore, if she was willing to endure a lot of pain, she could do the job without accommodation. But to reduce her pain, certain accommodations would be required.
Did the jury find for her on all of the causes of action or on some?
No. This was a very discerning jury.
Very what?
It found for the plaintiff on this Fair Employment and Housing Act discrimination claim.
You said there were three separate causes of action.
Well, those are the three in which it found for the plaintiff.
That's what I'm asking. All three.
There were Federal and State Leave Act causes of action.
Right. But it did on all three of the FEHA claims.
Yes. The three separate claims for relief, it did. If there are no other questions, I have nothing else.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case just argued is submitted for decision.